All right, we're back with another edition of the Red Mite Podcast. Kind of. This is actually our episode with the Boiler Express, a Purdue podcast. I thought it was a good conversation, and they were kind enough to send me the audio from the live stream. So here it is. We'll be back later in the week with Will and Matt, and we will talk about the Final Four. And as always, thanks for listening. Go Pack.
All right, welcome in, everybody, to the Boiler Express podcast and the Red and White podcast tonight. We're doing a little collaboration in advance of our national semifinal matchup in Phoenix this Saturday night. So we've got Evan from the Red and White podcast. Sorry, we just clarified that before we came on, too. On here, just Frank and myself, Damon, Dylan, and Chris are all out this evening. So we apologize for what this product looks like, but we're going to just kind of shoot the shit a little bit, talk about Saturday night and the Final Four and what our expectations are, what to kind of expect, what the run's been like. Before we get into that, though, I want to thank our sponsors. Also, good check out Cincy Blitzboards, really cool backyard game, kind of cornhole mixed with Yahtzee, mixed with a few other things. It's great for not just tailgates, but bar mitzvahs, baptisms, birthdays, whatever you want to do. Just a fun little party game, get people involved. Have another little option out there. They're great working with you on designs. Just look up at Cincy Blitzboards on Twitter, DM them, follow them, let them know you're interested in a board, and they'll get it designed and get it shipped to you. So, also, I have one more little teaser. It's not an ad, but we're just going to play a little something for y'all that are watching here tonight on something that we have coming up here, not just with Boiler Express, but with our cohort below us, Evan, at Red and White, and many other podcasts. So enjoy this little clip.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, just a little teaser. We're less than a week away from a pretty big announcement that not just the three of us are going to be involved in, but a lot of people out there are going to be involved in that we're really excited. So, with that being said, I want to kind of throw it to Evan to introduce himself, talk about his podcast, his background, and where you can find him at with the Red and White podcast.
Sorry, guys. I'm busy looking at these blitz boards. I'm trying to figure out what this game is. This looks a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
Is that a common thing by y'all?
I was actually unfamiliar with Blitzboards until they were kind enough to sponsor us. They've done some really cool designs for us. The logos are pristine. Like the artwork looks really good. I've been nothing short of impressed from everything they've done.
Yeah, the origin of our kind of relationship is that the founder is a Purdue grad and kind of watched our pod and got interested in our podcast and just kind of blossomed from there. We got to talking about kind of what he did in the comments, and then we kind of started a partnership with him. So
leave it to the engineering school. Very cool. Evan, Red and White Podcast. I appreciate you having me on. We cover NC State, and yeah, it's been a crazy time for us. So thanks for having me on. Talk about it.
Definitely. Frank, how are we doing this evening? You got any intro topics you want to talk about, or
any? No, I'm excited to dive into this game in a little bit higher detail to kind of get the perspective from both sides. I still don't know how I feel about the game. It's the Final Four, man. You know, there's no such thing as an upset, in my opinion. There's no expectations. What happens in the season, all that kind of goes out the window. So, yeah, excited to talk about this one for sure.
And it's interesting that you say no upsets, because this is probably like two of the biggest combined lines that you've had in national semifinals in a while, maybe ever. So that's kind of crazy. I agree with you. I don't think it's an upset, but Vegas would tend to disagree a little bit on that. But Evan, how do you feel about this run? Obviously, it's been crazy. I feel like I've seen that clip of the banked in three like a million times by now. So just talk about like what the run's been like, what's worked well, what is kind of, have you just flipped the switch in a certain area? Like what's it been like?
It has been the craziest thing that I have ever seen in my lifetime. And I always tell people lately that the simulation is broken because NC State's not supposed to have good things. And now we've got two teams in the men's and women's Final Four, which is just bonkers to me. You've all heard of stats. 1986, last time NC State has made the Final Four. I mean, that's forever ago. I mean, we have two national titles, but it has been 30 plus years of just banging our heads against the walls, and everything that you can imagine going wrong has gone wrong for NC State. We've neutered ourselves. We've made terrible hires. We've done all these things. And man, it's been so enjoyable. And I actually had somebody tell me one time recently and said, this is the first time as an NC State fan I've really experienced like true joy. And I'm sitting there thinking about it. I'm like, yeah, he's right. You know, we've had some ups and whatever, but we've never like gotten over the hump. It's been 40 years since we won a conference championship in any of the major sports, which is, it's crazy to think about. Like everybody has won it. Wake Forest has won a football conference championship. Like Duke has won their division. Duke has made the conference championship game. Like it's amazing that NC State could go this long. It's just so improbable and not win something. And then to do it this way, where, I mean, going into the ACC tournament, we're all like, hey, we might lose to Louisville. Louisville is horrendous. Like me, you, and two other guys could go give Louisville a run. And I'm just going to be honest, like nobody expected it. We just, every game, like, okay, you know, hey, all right. You know, and then they banked the three. I mean, beating Duke in the ACC tournament really gave them some confidence. I really think that was kind of, okay, we could do this, right? You know, Louisville's trash. Syracuse, you know, we beat them before. They're whatever. But beating Duke, where it's just like, all right, you just beat Duke. And I just think the guys kind of rallied around that. And then the Virginia game, still the most improbable thing of all of them. This is, you know, going back to the ACC tournament. Just going back, and I watched it the other day when on our little coaches show they do, and I'm just sitting there like, how the hell did we win the game? You're down six with a minute left in the game. You got Virginia's best free throw shooter on the line. He bricks the front end of a 1-1, and they don't have anybody to get a rebound. You're like, what is happening? Like, it's improbable, and I'm just at a loss for words for actually like what this means to our fan base. We were trying to do a space the other day, and I was like, I don't know what to say, because it's been unbelievable. It's such a ride. And like grown men were crying because like, damn, this just doesn't happen to us. Good things just don't happen to us. And all the good things are happening all the time. Like I'm watching the game with my 9-year-old, and he's like, yeah, we're winning. You know, like, this is great. And he didn't understand, like, dad, why are you so upset? Like, I'm not upset. I'm happy. The baseball game, we had a walk-off homer to beat Notre Dame in the bottom of the ninth inning, and he just thinks the Wolfpack wins all the time, and I'm like, that's just not how it's been, you know. But it's amazing. It's been an amazing ride. I'm just enjoying it. We're playing with house money right now. It's just been fantastic. I'm just gonna babble. But yeah,
and there's a comment here that says lots of parallels between Purdue and NC State. Sorry. And yeah, as you're talking, that was what's going through my head as well. We've endured a lot of pain. Now, we have had the conference championships and whatnot. But yeah, we've endured quite a bit of pain. And if you can tell me if my memory is right. So I actually live in Louisville, and I watched a lot of their games. NC State was down by like double digits at one point early in the game, right? If I remember
correctly. Yeah. I mean, Louisville came out of the gate just hot. Yeah. They're making everything. I'm like, all right, you know, they fired Kenny Payne. Like, they're going to come out and win one for the Gipper kind of game. You're like, all right, here we go. They're going to beat us. And then, you know, the rumors are that our coach has been told he was fired unless he won the ACC championship. And then, you know, that's kind of it. Just they came out and were like, all right, everybody just expected it. We just expected, all right, we might lose to Louisville. It's just, you know, NC State playing on Tuesday in the ACC tournament. It's kind of what happens.
So a little secret Long Beach State headline just behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, it was the exact same parallel. It wasn't even behind the scenes. Like, I mean, it's pretty well known, and you've heard plenty of national guys say, well, you know, Kevin Keats was trying to save his job. Like, he was fired. They told him he was going to be fired.
Yeah, he went from fired to a lifetime contract, maybe, right?
Yeah, I mean, now it's just like, and it's funny, you know, I had a guy, former basketball player, is coaching now, texted me earlier today, and he's like, I've got to find it. But he just said, I'm just questioning everything I know about coaching, because he was the same way. He's like, this team's, they're not very good. I don't think coach is getting anything out of them. And you're just like, yeah, I know. It's the weirdest thing. It doesn't make any sense.
So is it safe to say that his job could potentially hinge on a banked-in half-court-ish three against Virginia?
100%. He was fired if Mike O'Connell didn't make that shot and put the game into overtime.
That's crazy, 100%. Though. That's crazy to think about. I mean, because it's just the probability at such a low percentage shot. But good for him. I mean, he seems like a great coach.
He's for a guy who doesn't shoot well. Like, that's the unprobable part. O'Connell hadn't shot well during the year, and then March comes and he's been shooting like 40% from three. Like, where did this come from?
Yeah, that's when it matters, right? That's when it matters.
Yeah, when you mentioned Virginia.
Coach Keats mentioned at some point during the ACC tournament, he said it kind of in passing and it went under kind of undercovered. He said Mike O'Connell has found his voice as a leader, as a player. And like I think he just meant he's confident now and he's able to direct the team and do as needed. And he has been playing phenomenal. But that wasn't the same guy we've seen all year. It's crazy.
Yeah, so what in the tournament specifically, I know you talked about ACC tournament, but in the NCAA tournament, you know, obviously Burns is like one of the national, you know, folk heroes, like instant folk heroes of college basketball with what he's done in this tournament. You know, has it been all him? What other pieces have kind of helped you get here? Like, what have you seen change in the way that they've played together in just the recent four games in the NCAA tournament?
DJ Burns has been the constant and deservedly got all the attention. I thought Muhammad Diarra was probably going to get the ACC most valuable player. He had an unbelievable tournament, 60 boards, he had double doubles in every game. He's just been, you know, doing this through fasting during Ramadan. He's just been doing all of the things that unsung hero type stuff. And yeah, DJ Burns gets all the attention. DJ Horn is the guy that can put 30 on you without you look, you know, without you knowing it. He's unbelievable player, and he hadn't been playing that well. You know, we came out and I think Horn might've had like 10, he had six real early on in the Texas Tech game, like relegate first 6 or 7 points. And I'll answer that question for you, Nick. He had 7 points coming straight out of the Texas Tech game. And then he didn't score for the rest of the game. You're like, we can't win without DJ Horn. He's our guy. He's literally the guy that can put you on his back and score what needed. And he didn't score for like 34 minutes in that game. And then he got some free throws at the end and kind of got his flow. And even in the Oakland game, he wasn't – it was weird. Like, he wasn't getting the ball, and he just wasn't what we've seen all year. Like, the end of the – if you look at his March stats, I think he averaged 29 points a game. He was shooting 40% from three, you know, 4 or 5 assists a game. I mean, he was literally doing everything. You're like, okay, this DJ Horn can carry this team, but it's been DJ Burns who's been the constant in this NCAA tournament, and that's – It's wild because, in my opinion, it's always guards that win in the NCAA tournament. Like, it's historically, if you have a good backcourt, you know, those teams go far. You look at the, you know, Tom Izzo teams and even the UConn teams in the past. But now this year it's a bunch of big men. Klingon from UConn, Edie from Purdue, Burns, NC State. Alabama's got the transfer Nelson. Graham Nelson. It's a wild dichotomy this year. It's completely different. But, yeah, DJ Horn has just been, you know, he's been consistent all year. And I think he's a guy that has kind of been under the radar, which is kind of hard to believe just how important he was to us all year. We didn't win any games if DJ wasn't playing well. Yeah.
Yeah, and Frank, for, you know, maybe NC State fans that might be tuning in, what have you thought about Purdue's run to the – Final Four and kind of what's driven it? And, you know, I guess some of it's going to be parallels, like what Evan just said about a big man. You know, Purdue has been told for years that we will not win a Final Four or get to a Final Four because we have a big man centered offense so often, but yet here we are with three other teams that also feature a dominant big or dominant post player. So Frank, talk on that a little bit.
Yeah. This comment had me distracted a little bit here. So I'm not going to read that one. But it's funny. I think what's happened with Purdue is that really it's been defense has been like the big thing that really surprised me. I think, you know, going into the tournament, Purdue was second or third in the country in KenPom, you know, in overall offense. And I think they're around 20th in defense. But I feel like Purdue's played like a really good defensive team. We've seen some guys step up too offensively who are just kind of, you know, role type players, particularly Trey Kaufman Renrust, who I know you're really high on. We've seen him have a really good tournament. And we've seen some guys, you know, who coming off the bench playing a little bit more, who didn't play as much throughout the season, which still blows my mind. Miles Colvin's probably the big one, who, you know, he logged 7 or 8, you know, games with 0 minutes in the regular season. And he's played in every tournament game. He adds an element of athleticism and speed that, you know, we don't really have matched elsewhere, maybe with Cam Heidi. But I just think that, you know, offensively we've been really crisp, but defensively it's been a huge thing. And, you know, like you said, it's been a really interesting tournament in that, you know, you always hear it, guards win in March, you got to have a good backcourt, but you're right. All four Final Four teams have dominant big men. And I'm really excited to see DJ Burns play. There was a big for Purdue when Purdue played NC State in the Big Ten ACC Challenge a few years ago. His name is Travion Williams, who DJ Burns reminds me quite a bit of. Size wise, they're comparable, but they both have that passing ability that's really cool to see. So I'm pretty excited to see those two battle it out. But Russ, am I missing anything here in terms of what's happened?
No, I just want to kind of add to, you know, Evan mentioned it being, what, 1986 since you guys have been to a Final Four, and it's 1980 since we've been to a Final Four, and it was, you know, the same deal. Like, I'm sitting there with a 3-year-old daughter that I'm trying not to, like, get too crazy, because it is a kid's natural reaction to be like, why are you mad? And it's like, no, I'm not mad. Like, I'm happy. Like, I'm emotional. And, like, we've had a great coach in Gene Cady who, you know, poured his heart into this program and kind of built this program to what it is. Mentored Matt Painter, who then took over and has now built the program that it is now based off of the way that Katie ran his program, while also kind of, you know, adapting the program to the current offensive schemes, defensive schemes. And so just to see not only Painter and this team finally make a Final Four after we've won championships, we've won Big Ten tournaments, we've got a winning record against every other team in the Big Ten, we just can't get to the Final Four for whatever reason. And so it was emotional. It's huge for us to have broken through while being number one in the country, while being one seed so many times, losing to a 16 seed. Like, it's been a very emotional run for us as well. And that's one thing, if you guys aren't familiar with Purdue out there, it's, you know, Purdue, the what you hear a lot this weekend is how many double-digit seeds we've lost to, especially with NC State being a double-digit seed. Like, there's people going, oh, Purdue finally makes the Final Four and they meet their kryptonite, a double-digit seed. Like, that's where they're going to go down. So, but I think Purdue fans in the end, you know, will we be upset if we don't take home the national championship? Yes, but, you know, we're not – maybe we don't feel quite like we're on house money like NC State does, but it's still kind of like a monkey off our back. Like, it's kind of like, go play your game. Whatever happens, happens. There's no upsets in the Final Four. You know, yes, NC State's been on an improbable run, but it's, you don't make that run just based off luck. Like, you've got to have the talent. You've got to get it done. You've got to match up with team after team. And it's the ultimate back against your wall, right? Like, you're one banked in three from being in the NIT instead of the Final Four. Like, that's crazy, which means you've got some magic. You've got some luck on your side. And that's what a tournament is about, is just getting hot for a few weekends in a row, not winning, you know, the majority of your 30 games over a season. So, you know, I think, yeah, as Purdue fans, we're excited. We are confident, but at the same time, it's a little bit of house money effect for us as well. So,
I saw the stat. No 11 seed there's been 6 made to the Final Four. None have made it to the championship game. So that makes y'all feel a little better.
Well, but I see that as someone's due. You know, it sounds like you're a baseball fan. It's like when a guy steps up to the plate and they say, oh, he's 0-for-3 tonight. I'm like, he bats 250. So he's got to hit this next one. Right. I mean, that's the way I look at it. It sounds like both of our fan bases have experienced a decent amount of pain and disappointment. So we're just primed for it. We're just ready. But I do like to ask the question, what's your perception? I don't know how much Purdue basketball you watch, but what's your perception of Purdue, just as the team, and particularly about Zach Edey? Is he a guy who just camps out under the basket and draws lots of fouls? And I mean, there's definitely an argument to be had there. Does he get away with elbows and travels, or is he a good basketball player? People's opinions are all over the place, but just wanted to get your thoughts on him, if you've seen him play, and what you think of him, and just the perception of the team from a third party.
He's a guy that camps out under the basket, gets a lot of fouls. Yeah, so we got that. We've got that covered. He's a hell of a basketball player. I mean, you don't become two-time National Player of the Year for no reason. I mean, the guy can ball. I do know that he can pick up chicks, too. I saw that video going around of Zach Edey. That was great. So, no, I mean, Purdue's a big-time program. We look at them like, you know, that's where they should be. Like it's no surprise that you guys are in the Final Four, right? We expect, as an NC State fan, we expect a program like Purdue to go far in the tournament. And, you know, it's to us, it's okay. They're another one. They're another giant in our way, right? We've ran into Duke twice, Carolina, Virginia, Marquette, who I thought was one of the best teams in the tournament. And to be honest, we've handled almost everybody. The only team that gave us trouble and took us overtime was Oakland of all teams. But the rest of the games hadn't been close. And it's just kind of surprising to me. So I look at Purdue and like, damn, they're a bunch of good players. I mean, not just Zach Edey, but Braden Smith. You know, every time I open my DraftKings app, it's like, is he going to have a triple double? I'm like, yeah, that's not good. I don't.
Braden's popular for that reason. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, so Purdue's a hell of a program. And, you know, I expect them to have a lot of talent. And, you know, Zach Edey, I think he's a hell of a basketball player. Obviously, he's you know, tall. And the MO is he just hangs out and gets 5 second calls doesn't get 5 second calls in the paint and dunks it and whatnot. But he's more than that. He's a good player. It's going to be interesting to me to see how Edey matches up with Burns, you know, or how they defend Burns. Because, you know, is Edey going to follow him out 15 feet? Or is he going to let him, you know, DJ take little 15, 12-foot jumpers, which he can hit pretty consistently. So it's going to be interesting to see how they guard him. I don't think Burns is going to guard Edey on defense. I think we'll put Middlebrooks and Diarra on there and let Burns chase around the other guy who was it, Gillis or Kaufman-Wren.
Kaufman-Wren, yeah.
Kaufman-Wren, the other one.
It'll be interesting on Gillis because Gillis actually plays, even though TKR, Trey Kaufman-Wren is a starter, he averages about 15 to 20 minutes, whereas Gillis has been playing more like 25 to 30 minutes lately.
Yeah. So,
and he shoots a three. Like, he'll get out. He loves that corner three. He basically kind of sits down there, and if they try to double or help on Edey, Gillis can make you pay for sure.
Yeah, so I think it'll be Kaufman-Wren who Burns is on. I don't think you'll get the Burns-Edey matchup. And ironically, the thing we've talked about on our podcast for the longest time this year is that height has been giving DJ Burns trouble. And every time we say that, he's come out against a bigger guy and played well. So I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. He's proven me wrong time and time again this year. But historically, tall guys and DJ Burns don't mix. But
are there many 7'4 guys in the ACC?
Yeah. No, there's not. There's some 7-footers, but there's nobody like Zach Edey. I mean, Quentin Post, Flipowski, 6'11". Who's it? Ingram. Baycott's not 7 foot, but he's a big dude. I don't know.
Edey and Baycott were high school teammates. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No, they played against
each other in high school. Yeah. And yeah, I think Baycott got the lion's share of the minutes, and Edey played like, I think he scored like 3 points per game in high school, something crazy like that.
The stat going around now is, or the fact that came out, we most of us knew it in Raleigh, but DJ Burns was the number 3 player in South Carolina. Number 1 was Zion Williamson. Number 2 was John Morant coming out of high school.
So, okay. Like,
he had some talent in front of him here. And, he went to Tennessee, didn't play, transferred to Winthrop, played for a little while. Played for a few years, dominated the Big South, and then ended up at NC State. Even after last year, nobody thought that he would become the focal point of our offense. But he has really developed as a passer, and that has really aided his game. Oakland probably gave us the most fits because they were double and triple teaming him. And he just felt held onto the ball a little bit too long. But they eventually got him out of that, but it's going to be interesting to see how they, how they defend Burns and who's Burns defending. I imagine it's going to be on Kaufman-Wren as opposed to Edey that a lot of people are expecting.
Yeah, I'm interested to see that too, because I mean he's shown when you do double him, he can make the good pass, and I've seen some crazy passes from that guy. Yeah. I mean, behind the back, just some It's, and that if I heard Keats right, it's like he almost prefers to pass. Like it's like he gets happy. He's like, okay, I'm getting doubled now. Like let's go. Time to make an elite pass. Like that's something he takes a lot of pride in, and that scares me a little bit because it just like how much help can you bring? You know, that's going to be a major factor, I think.
Yeah, to answer Nick's question in the chat, he is left-handed. That is his primary.
Yeah. Okay. So while we're on the subject of those two bigs too, and Frank kind of obviously mentioned what the public perception of Edie has been with the foul calls and being a foul merchant, etc. What has the image or the persona of DJ Burns in the ACC been this year? Does he get the same kind of treatment? Do people complain about the way he's officiated? What's kind of his perception in that conference?
The exact opposite of Zach Edey. DJ Burns gets mauled repeatedly, and he has this tournament. You can see his frustration, and I think it was in the Oakland game in particular. But at the end of the game, you know, he's just getting frustrated. In that Oakland game, we went to overtime, and they were still mauling him, and he's just like, nope, this is not going to happen. And he just started bullying people, but they weren't calling it, right? And he's just – It's a product of him being huge, and they just officiate him differently. They're like, oh, he's a big guy. You know, they're going to let him hack him. I mean, it's just he's been getting just mauled every game. So it's going to be interesting to see how this game is officiated because it's the complete opposite of how Edie gets called or gets officiated, right? It doesn't make any sense. You know, we always assume the product that – for us, it's a product of being NC State. And then you're playing, you know, Virginia, who gets the benefit of that's how Virginia plays. And then, you know, Carolina and their tendencies. And then Duke doesn't, you know, nobody gets any calls against Duke. So, you know, we're kind of used to that. But it's been interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how this game is called in particular because they are handled very differently, the two big guys. So,
and to put some numbers on that, so Russ Edey draws 9.5 fouls per game, which is in the 100th percentile of all D1 players. So DJ Burns, 2.4 fouls drawn per game.
Yeah, so exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I will say I've watched almost every tournament game from NC State. He's a little more touch-oriented, I think, than Edie is. Edie or Easy is going to kind of physical you. You know, he doesn't really have the ability to or if he does, he doesn't showcase it as much, the ability to step out and hit like the 12 to 15 footers, I think like Burns does. So there's that factor. But yeah, that's interesting to see, you know, that big of a gap there.
Yeah, now, he is a big touch player. He gets the ball high up on the glass and with a soft touch, and he gets a lot of bounces. You know, he can do it all, which is wild to me. And that's what's been, you know, so mesmerizing and why everybody's got his attention or why he's got everybody's attention. You know, I think it's just he's talented and you just don't expect a guy that big to have that kind of touch. Usually it's, you know, tractor trailer. I don't know if you guys remember that guy. Like usually they just kind of bulldoze people, right? Burns doesn't do that.
And so when I think about how teams have looked to defend Purdue this season, some teams have chose to play Edie one-on-one. We saw a lot of that from Gonzaga, and they tried to double off ball screens on Braden Smith. We've seen teams double, triple team, Utah State triple teamed them. They didn't really play defense though. They just kind of like surrounded them, put their hands up and just kind of built a wall around them. I mean, do you see NC State as the type that would try to play someone like Zach Edie one-on-one, or are they more of a, you know, post trap and rotate out of it? What would you, if you had to guess, what would you expect to see?
I don't expect them to double Edie. I expect them to play him one-on-one. And if he's going to score 60, then by all means, let him score 60, but don't let Braden Smith put 30 on you. And, you know, don't let some of these other guys win that game. I just think nobody's been able to stop, Edie. And so stop everybody else. I think that's probably your best bet.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you know, Matt Painter talks about how you can watch a team on film and see what their defensive tendencies are, how they like to play defense, and then you really don't know what's going to happen because teams typically adjust or play something different than what they normally do when they play Zach Edey. And one, the teams that naturally double or naturally trap the post and they're really good at scrambling out of it have kind of given him some problems in the past. Rust Northwestern comes to mind as a team that just they trap everybody in the post. So that's just something I wanted to ask about and kind of get your thoughts on. But you know, outside of Edie, is it who in your mind could potentially give NC State some trouble? Is it Braden Smith or Trey Kaufman? Right? He's been playing really well. I mean, they're all sorts of guys, but is it who like so you let's say you shut down Edie, who's the next guy that would give you a little bit?
Certainly Braden Smith. I think the way he distributes the ball and gets everybody else involved. I mean, it's a very cliche, but that's his job and that's what he does. I've watched him enough to know that guy could play. Lance Jones is good. I don't know if he's as consistent of a shooter as Braden Smith, but you know, it's a tough backcourt, and it's going to be interesting how they match up with us. I think we've been able to stop the guards and make, you know, we did with Marquette with Kolick, right? He's been the guy that has just been, he's made Marquette go all year, and they took away his ability to, you know, distribute and made him beat us, right? And he had, I don't remember any points he had. He had a bunch of points, but he only had 2 assists. And he was getting frustrated as hell. And you can see after the game, he ripped his jersey open, right? We've all seen that video. They frustrate the hell out of him. And I think that's probably what we'll be doing with Braden Smith is take away what he wants to do, which is distribute. And, you know, if he can be your main scorer, let him be your main scorer. But I think that's the kind of the gamble that NC State is going to roll with.
And so who should Purdue fans be worried about? We've talked about Burns. You talked about Horn. You said O'Connell's been playing really well. Taylor scares me, you know, just from athleticism and, you know, shooting standpoint. But if there's one guy maybe Purdue fans don't know about or who might be overlooking, who should we be concerned about?
Diarra.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if Ramadan's over. He can eat, but he couldn't eat during the or before the – entire Duke game, and then you know you could tell he was struggling. The other games have been late at night, so about halfway through the game they're shoving bananas and stuff in him and getting him hydrated and all that stuff. But he's a guy that's gonna have he's gonna give Edie trouble on the boards, right? I know Edie's big and he's gonna get a lot of rebounds. Diarra's long, athletic, and he's been getting, you know, 12, 15 boards a game. I mean, dude had 60 in the ACC tournament. He had 12 and 15 in the first 2 rounds of the NCAA tournament. And he's been getting double doubles like crazy. He's kind of been the unsung hero. Like, nobody's really talking about him, but for a big guy who's like, you know, the story is that he just started playing basketball his junior year in high school and he's just got a world of potential. He's, you know, not the best shooter, but if he hits one, he'll probably hit 3, you know, but he is going to get 10 boards a game. He is going to get 10 points, you know. It's almost automatic for him right now, just the way he's been playing. I think you'll see a lot of Ben Middlebrooks, our other big. I think he's the one that's going to be banging against Edie. Feisty guy. He's not necessarily the offensive weapon, but he is a guy that is going to – they're going to throw – you know, if you're going to throw a body at Edie, it's going to be probably Middlebrooks. So I expect you'll see a lot of Burns Middlebrooks and a lot of Diarra Middlebrooks combos on the floor until he gets in foul trouble.
I never thought I'd be looking up, you know, when is Ramadan on a podcast, but it looks like Tuesday, April 9th is when it ends this year. Oh, so that could play a factor, especially since we're the first game on Saturday night. We're tipping at 6:09 p.m. Saturday, so right. That could be a factor. But is that, do you know if that's locally, like when sundown is locally, or if it's based off of just.
It's probably wherever he is, I would assume, which is unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now we'll have to look up what sunset is in Glendale.
7:45. So, I looked it up.
I actually like that question, Frank, because I was going to ask both of you guys an X factor for the other fan base to kind of know about. So, Frank, who would you kind of tell NC State about that isn't the big name of Braden or even like Lance that he mentioned, obviously Edie, that could possibly pop off and be an X factor in this game?
Yeah, I mean, we've mentioned both of them tonight, but Trey Kaufman Wren and Mason Gillis are the two, I think, easier answers. You know, Trey Kaufman Wren, in my opinion, is playing the best basketball of his career. And, you know, Mason Gillis, I mean, he's really improved his shooting. He was a really good shooter every season except for last season. For some reason, he struggled last season. But, you know, near 50% from three, Purdue will get him in the game. And as Russ said, you know, Trey Kaufman-Wren starts. Oftentimes, Mason Gillis plays more minutes. But Purdue will get him in the game. And they'll run some actions to get him open three, some baseline staggers and roll replace action, some horns twists with an exit screen in the corner just to kind of get him open, and we'll actually run some actions for him. But, you know, one guy who we've seen just flashes from, you know, in the tournament and even before is Cam Heidi. He's extremely athletic. He's only a freshman, and he's defensively, a junior, Russ, I would say. He's where, like, most, you know, decent defending juniors are, just from an athleticism and skill standpoint. So those are probably the guys I would say to watch out for. Am I missing anyone, Russ?
So I actually would have gone with Camden Heidi. You know, he's been somebody that, you know, especially if you scouted Purdue throughout the season, he is a redshirt freshman, so he's been in the program a little bit longer, but he didn't get a ton of minutes at the beginning of the year, especially once we hit the meat of our schedule and they kind of shrunk the rotation a little bit. But lately he's been averaging about 15, you know, 12 to 15 minutes, and he's very athletic. He plays very well above the rim. He is just flying all over the court, and he has, you know, had some double digit games now, points wise, as far as contributions go. And he just will get in there and give everything he's got for whatever time he's on the court. And, you know, Painter has preached that a lot with, you know, obviously guys like Braden and Edie are going to get their 30, 35 plus minutes, even like a guy like Fletch, but there's guys like Colvin or Heidi that might see the floor for only 4 or 5 minutes. So when they're on that floor, they're going to play like they're going to get subbed out at the next dead ball, you know? So they're going to put a lot into that game. And Heidi is athletic enough that he could give some teams a different look than what they might be expecting coming into this Final Four. You know, if we're kind of playing with a little bit of house money, and we're going to try things a little bit differently, he's somebody that could see some extended minutes and make some shots. And he can do everything, like I said, from play above the rim. He can also hit threes. And so he's somebody that might have some people, even announcers, kind of going, oh, okay, let's look up who the heck this guy is. So, Evan, what do you think the recipe is for you guys to win on Saturday from looking at Purdue and what you guys have done well in this tournament? You know, if you said, hey, if we do like these three things or avoid these three things, we feel pretty good about our chances of winning this game.
That's tough because I haven't felt good about us winning a game since, like, I don't know, 2015. And the way they're playing right now, they're winning in improbable ways. I mean, we won a game in the ACC tournament where we didn't hit a three-pointer. Like, how many times can you win a game without hitting a three? It's crazy.
It's very rare, but Indiana did do it once this season. I'm sorry, I had to interject there. But, I think through that, it was in January. Through that time, there had been like three games in this season where a team won without, or just didn't hit a three, period.
Yeah. So it's crazy. And for us, like, we're not a great shooting team, like, consistently. So if we come out and shoot well, I know that's, again, a very boring answer, but if we shoot well and don't do dumb things, then we have a chance because we have given everybody fits. Our guards are athletic. They've been playing really good defense. So, I mean, that's kind of how we got to do. We've got to play fast. You know, we really frustrated Duke with the pace, not necessarily because we're getting up and down the floor, but, you know, the pressure defense was forcing them to take quick shots and bad shots. And, you know, we're getting rebounds and pushing up the floor. That's how State has been playing. That's how State's going to, you know, thrive. And if we can get Purdue kind of off schedule and out of their offense, then that's where State will excel. Now, Purdue's too good for us for me to expect that. So, you know, we just have to not do dumb stuff. We have a tendency to, you know, take bad shots. And, you know, if you look at our shot chart, it's something I've harped on our podcast a lot. Like, midseason, our shot chart was all over the place, right? It wasn't one of those pretty ones where it's nice and colorful under the basket and then all the colors are on the arc. You know, it looked like somebody took a buckshot to it and just, you know, all over the place. And, you know, no surprise, we didn't win a lot of games. You know, but if you look at it from the ACC tournament, it looks like an Alabama shot chart where it's either under the basket or around the arc. And there's a clear reason for that, right? You know, we're just, you know, the low percentage shots. You know, Casey Marcel, God bless him. You know, he had a bad run there where he takes a lot of turnarounds and you're like, no, okay, went in, yes. Like, so he's very much no, yes guy. But yeah, you know, State needs to take good shots, play within themselves, and, you know, not let the moment be too big for them, because the talent is there. I've been saying it all year. This team's too talented to be as bad as they were during the season. And, you know, you watch it the first half of the Duke game in the Elite Eight, and you know, you're like, damn, this is a team I saw all season where they're not moving the ball. They're taking bad shots. They kind of looked out of sorts. And it wasn't really Duke doing anything. It was just they were trying to get to the Final Four rather than they're trying to beat Duke. You know, I don't know if that makes sense. But and then the second half, and Charles Barkley, I give him a credit. He said it at halftime. He said, you know, the team that settles down and tries to win this game is going to make the Final Four. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly right. And then State came out and they settled down. They played their game. They were moving the ball. They were taking good shots. You know, and that's how they won. And that's how they really controlled the game. You know, they played strong defense and frustrated Duke, got them playing faster than they wanted to. And yeah, I mean, for us, it's just, we've just been so streaky. You know, if O'Connell can still shoot 35, 40% from three, you know, he's not going to shoot 10 of them. He's going to shoot four or five. But if he makes two or three, that's big. That's big for us. Same thing with DJ Horn. DJ Horn has got to get back to being DJ Horn. We saw that in the end at the ACC tournament. Him and RJ Davis at Carolina were going back and forth. I'm like, man, these guys are both, like, they want it. And he laid it all out for that game, and it just hadn't been the same since. But you know, DJ Horn gets back, he's a nightmare, man. He's unbelievable how he just gets the ball in the bucket. He can shoot, he can drive, and you know, he's been making plays now in the NCAA tournament. He's getting others involved. So I mean, for us, it's play hard, don't take dumb shots, don't do dumb things, and we'll be in it at the end. I don't think it's a blowout. I think 11, probably a little generous. I know Purdue's better than us, and nobody expected us to be here, but I think this team is playing at a level right now that can compete with most of these teams. They just have to keep it up. They just have to keep playing the way they've been playing, which is not stupid. And I know that's a very weird answer, but you know, for the folks that have watched our game, I saw somebody comment, how are they 17 and 13 this year? We played stupid. We did so many dumb things. We took low percentage shots. We were, you know, not getting in the flow of the offense. The effort wasn't there. And then even DJ Burns, you know, and I called this out during the ACC tournament. He was trying to win. It was notable effort where he's not like just jogging up the court. He's running up the court. And I know he's a big guy. He's not running fast, but he could see the effort level is there. And the guys were all doing that, right? And just there was something had clicked, and the effort level is there, and they believe right now. And if they can come out and play with that effort level and not let the moment be too big for them, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, so another Diarra-related update here. So sunset Saturday night will be at 6:54 p.m. So it sounds like it'll be one of those games you were talking about where they're going to be showing a lot of food in him at halftime, and maybe he's a different player in the second half. So
yeah,
that's just a fascinating sub story of this game. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to do this, because I may not have known that.
So before I ask you the same question, Frank, on the three keys for Purdue, I also want you to kind of talk about the history for NC State fans of teams, and maybe specifically people that don't shoot well normally, how they shoot against Purdue when they
play. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh,
come on now. Yeah. So, We are kingmakers. We have lost so many games to backup quarterbacks and backup point guards and guys who never hit shots, dropping 30 on us. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear
it. Hey, now, we made what it was, Joe Montana, right, Russ?
Mm-hmm. Joe Montana was a third-string quarterback for Notre Dame when they played us 1 year. Purdue was up 3 scores, injured both their starting quarterbacks. Joe Montana comes back, leads Notre Dame to beat Purdue after being down 3 scores in the second half, and then the rest of his career is just history. Yeah, okay, we made Joe Montana. Like, and then if you talk about Gonzaga, they had 2 different guys. One guy that didn't hit a 3 all year hit a 3 against us in the Sweet 16, And another player on their team has hit like 7 or 8 three-pointers all year, but all but 3 of them came against us in the 2 matchups against Purdue.
Yeah, Graham BK. Yeah, he's 7 threes on the season, 4 of which were against Purdue. So, and so Purdue lost in 2014 to Little Rock in the first round of the Big Ten tournament, and it took 2 players to hit the first 3 of their career to force overtime of that game where Purdue eventually lost. So, so the whole, like, you know, this guy's not a good shooter or whatnot, or, you know, just seems to go out the window. But I think maybe every fan base feels like that to a degree, you know, that just stats and history and whatnot just kind of, you know, this doesn't seem to carry forward as far as Purdue goes. But, you know, in terms of the keys, Russ, one thing I look at just looking on paper here, you know, Purdue, when you look at the losses this season, I'll have to check the Wisconsin loss in the Big Ten tournament to make sure the trend's there. But, you know, the big commonality among Purdue's losses is just lots of turnovers. And NC State, you know, they take care of the ball, but they don't force a ton of turnovers either. They're only forcing, you know, 17.5 per game, which is just like middle of the pack in terms of, you know, where that number stands. And so when I see teams that are
17.5 is middle of the pack, I feel like that'd be pretty high, because usually our goal is like,
I'm sorry, 17.5 turnover percentage. My mistake.
Okay. I was like, man,
if we turn it over 17 times, sorry, we might not be standing a good chance in this game. Okay.
looking at the wrong numbers here. But yeah, so Purdue is only turning it over 11 times per game. NC State is only turning the ball over offensively 9.4 times per game. So teams are pretty good at taking care of the ball. So hopefully that monkey doesn't pop up. But I think, you know, another key is just to hit threes, because, you know, Purdue didn't shoot the ball very well against Tennessee. Still got the win, but, you know, when Purdue is clicking and they have just the balance of the inside and the outside, it just guarding Purdue can be a nightmare. And then ultimately defense, you know, how can we defend Horn? How can we defend Burns? Really good guards have given Purdue problems this season. Boo Booey comes to mind, Russ. I felt like we did a good job containing Nimhard from Gonzaga for the most part. We turned him into more of a distributor. You know, Dalton Connect. You know, I'm not too concerned about that. But, you know, how can we contain him defensively, I think, are really going to be the big keys. But what do you think, Russ?
Yeah, I was going to go with, obviously, you know, taking care of the ball, not turning it over. You know, and also I would say if we can contain DJ Horn, because I feel good about our post defense. I feel like they might let the big guys play a little bit because, you know, yes, DJ Burns will probably benefit from playing in the same game as Edie, because the officials will pretty much have no choice but to officiate them the same way in the game. And so I think that, you know, Burns could have a decent game against us, but if we can keep Horn from going off and making somebody else be a support piece for Burns, or even a couple other guys kind of step up if Burns cannot score over the taller Edie, I think that'll be key for us as well. Cause like you said, big, you know, guards going off against us, like, and just, you know, like Connect in the first half could not miss. Like, it did not look good against Tennessee. We were down 11. Connect he was hitting everything. He was hitting, you know, Caitlin Clark type shots, like just throwing shots up and they were going in. Luckily he missed some key shots down the stretch and we were able to pull that game out. So if Horn goes off and we can't contain him and we don't take care of the ball, and also controlling the rebounds. You know, you guys are, NC State is like 100th percentile in defensive rebounding, but like single digit percentile in offensive rebounding. Like, you guys can't buy an offensive board, but you're very elite defensive rebounding. So if we can find a way to get some offensive rebounds against you all, because, you know, the statement for our offense has kind of been our best offense is sometimes a missed shot because we've been so good at offensive rebounding. But if you guys can maintain, you know, that elite level of defensive rebounding and take that away from us, that could cause our offense to struggle a little bit as well.
Yeah, yep. I mean, I'm looking up with the guy's question in the chat here about how will State handle the half court offense, and then one of y'all just mentioned it about shooting threes. Yeah, that one right there. I'll caution you that our statistics are very misleading, because we are not playing the same way that we did for the first 34 games or 33 games of the year. Like, it's a different team. So looking at the trend lines late in the season and like AC tournament, this and then the NCAA tournament is going to be more indicative of how to our expect our performance. And I'll show you what I mean. If you look at, you just said, if you look at 3-point defense across the season, I'm not sure what we ranked at, but we've held Duke to 23% 3-point shooting. Marquette, who's extremely guard heavy, they shoot a lot of threes, 12% 3-point shooting. Texas Tech, 22% 3-point shooting. And even Gulkey from Oakland, they had the one kid, Townsend, who lit it up, but they were only 30% from 3-point land. Our 3-point defense has been phenomenal this tournament, and that has been a huge driver of how NC State's been able to play. They are pressuring. Our guards are big and strong, and they have been pressuring the ball and making guys take bad shots. I did a – somebody put a clip on Twitter of all the Marquette threes, and I think – I'm going to pull up the number right here. They shot 31 threes that game. They made four, and I went back and counted. There was four that we didn't have a hand up that were not contested. Like, that's not normal for us, or hadn't been this year. But this tournament, they've been pressuring the ball. They've been getting hands up. They've been closing out on the threes, and it's paid off. The, you know, that Marquette game was wild to me because, like, oh, yeah, Marquette had a bad shooting game. Okay, but Duke had a bad shooting game. Texas Tech had a bad shooting game. It's not a you know, it's not a fluke. We're playing tough defense. And, yeah, I think our, you know, Casey Morsell's fantastic defensive guard. Jaden Taylor, you mentioned earlier, he's been shooting all right late in the season, but his MO is playing defense. He kept saying he wanted to be defensive player of the year. We've got guys that can pressure the ball and, you know, contest shots, and you'll get some open shots. I mean, I have no doubt, but if we get a hand up, I wouldn't be surprised if Purdue shoots a worse percentage than they have been all year from three, just because that's been the trend for team State has played. Surprisingly.
Yeah. So sorry if we startled you there, Evan. I want to welcome in Dylan.
What was that supposed to mean, startling you? Jeez Louise. Well,
you know, you got kind of moved to the side there because you just kind of popped in there. So
am I late? Am I that late?
He's our Riz King. He's our morale guy. So
you're too old to be dropping Riz King. What are we? You're 87, Russ. Act your age. Jeez.
Hey, 88 next week,
right? my name. Actually, shout out to Dan. I was in the comments all night. And I decided, you know what? The comments are for squares. No offense, Nick and Dan and all of our commenters, but I'm back.
Yeah, and also, too, Evan, a little background. I saw you react to a comment earlier by Dylan about us looking quite handsome this evening. So there's a few Purdue pods out there, and one of them has a segment known as the Handsome Hour. So the word handsome is thrown around a lot between us and between Purdue pods and things like that. So that's where that kept coming up from. So
the Purdue podcast community is a positive one. Hey, yeah. JR's in the comments. Let's go. I had to pay a fine because I said something not family friendly on the Big Ten Huddle in the comments last night. So I self-imposed a $5.99 fine.
There you go.
It had to do with Zach Edey's post-game comments. Well, no, it wasn't post-game. It was when Braden Smith was taking a selfie and he said he had a something. And I said that.
Oh,
I self-imposed a fine for saying that.
That was a thing. Yeah. That was a weird comment that he made.
It was very random and very awkward. Yeah,
didn't switch. Evan, if you haven't seen that, you can look it up. It was a FaceTime selfie scenario right after the game, and Edey made a very strange, strange comment. Yeah,
can we get in trouble for saying it? I don't.
You can say it if you want. I don't know.
Said he had a boner. It was weird. I don't know why.
It was a weird thing. It's just a weird thing to say. I didn't laugh. I was
picking up the chicks. So maybe he was dropping the message.
I haven't seen the video. I've just heard about it. I haven't
seen the video.
That's very interesting. Just a little sneak off to the side of a party there.
The girls' reactions in the background is what make it. The little girl's like, oh. She's like appalled that somebody's gonna hook up in college. Like, no way.
Right.
Yeah. Right. That's the most shocking news ever. Is they're hooking up in college? Holy crap.
Yeah, especially an athlete,
One of the best athletes of all time. Yeah, easy. Shocker! Good Jesus, what are we doing?
So, Dylan, you're just in time. I think we're pretty much going to move to predictions and what we expect to actually happen.
I'm really good at these.
Do you have any thoughts before we put predictions and you let Evan and the NC State crowd know what your go-to phrase is here on?
Love Burns. I'm a big fan of Burns. I think he's electric. Big fan of his. I won't be when we play, but every other time I'm a big fan of his. No, so every time I'm really bad at predictions, I'm bad at numbers. That's why Frank and Russ are the resident number guys. So my prediction's always the same, been the same since I joined this podcast. It's Boilers by a billion. Some people say Boilers by a million. No, it's Boilers by a billion. People get it right. Some people take that literally, as I really think Purdue's going to score a billion points. They could. It's March Madness. Who knows? But no, Boilers by a billion. Respect to Burns and the NC State crowd. They're good people. They got to be better than Tennessee fans, because my God, were my DMs on fire after that game. Oh, geez, Louise. It was Tennessee fans are brutal. I can only guarantee. I bet some correction facilities have better fans than them. But good Lord. Anyway, yeah, Boilers by a billion.
Evan, I'll let you go next there, buddy, since you're the guest. What's your actual prediction? What do you really expect to happen Saturday night?
Boilers by a billion. I mean, that's kind of what it sounds like to me. No, I mean, I have not expected us to win any of these games, so I'm just going to keep rolling with that. Like, I think they'll play hard. I think Purdue's a hell of a team. I think State will cover 11, but my expectations are for them not to win. I don't know if they will or not. I hadn't expected them to win all this whole tournament. So I'm going to roll with that, man. Like, all these teams are really good, and just like, I don't know how we're going to beat Marquette. I don't know how we're going to beat Duke, and we just keep winning. So
I'm very happy you beat Duke. Thank you for that. I hate Duke.
America's team.
Really? I was rooting for them. Good Lord.
Says Duke fans. So Russ, I just now, did my simulations. I did run 10,000 simulations of this game.
Like everyone does.
Yeah, Evan, yeah, Frank, like, has, yeah, like, you've heard of Ken Palm and how he does predictions and things like that. Frank has Frank Palm, I think is what we're trying to call it. He's got his own.
I actually think I'm going to call it Frankings.
You know, nice.
Yeah. That's why we call him the big brain. I mean, his own brain is sponsored by CBB Analytics. Shout out.
So Purdue won 88% of those simulations. But again, that's why you play the game. When I did this time last year, granted the methodology was kind of in its infancy at the time, Purdue won virtually all of the simulations against Fairleigh Dickinson. So, we all know what happened there. Again, that's why you play the game. I think it's going to be a close game, to be honest with you. There's a comment here from Nick Burris, Purdue wins by 5-7, I believe. However, I'm prepared to be hurt again. Couldn't agree more. I don't think many Purdue fans are overlooking NC State. I mean, like I said, it's the Final Four. Every team's really good. I think that it's going to be a 2-3 point win for Purdue. That comes down to, maybe a final possession, final two possessions kind of a game. But I think that, I think that Horn is going to have a really good game. Burns is going to give us some problems, especially with his passing. I just think that it's going to be a unique style of team that Purdue really hasn't seen a lot of the season, but yeah, I think it's going to be a grinder of a game, but Purdue ekes out a 2-3 point win.
Yeah. So kind of the mantra for Purdue in non-conference, especially Power Six opponents, is that the first half is pretty close, and then we make some adjustments and the second half kind of turns into a little bit of a different game. We've talked about a lot too that, Painter has talked about on the coach's show that he tries to predict what other teams will do. He looks at their tape to see how they've, played, especially other large bigs similar or close to Zach Edey as he could find. And then the team does something completely different. So the first half is just kind of a crapshoot. And, it's the Final Four. Both these teams are coming in hot. I think that the first half is pretty close. I think the second half is where you see the game open up a little bit, but I don't think it's a game that either team runs away with, and it does come down to, that 3-5 point mark at the end of the game. I think it could be higher scoring than what we've seen, especially from Purdue so far this tournament, because I think NC State will try to speed the game up. But Purdue has played some fast games before. We've had some games where we've scored over 100. The second half of Utah State, especially, we topped 100. So I think this is going to be a 2-3 point game, at most 5-7, and possibly in the 90s. So somewhere around like 98, 92. 98-95, that does come down to some late free throws. I think Burns, as much as I said, the key is to try to shut down Burns or Horn, not let both of them go off. I think they both do have good games. Diarra, given the recent research we've done, could be a second half kind of monster. because I think the first half you will see some NC State foul trouble and maybe some adjustment in the second half that opens the game up even more than what we see coming out of the gates. And I think it's going to be really exciting. I think both teams are going to play loose. I think that, you know, the way you talk about NC State playing not to lose, that I think Purdue played a little bit tighter against Tennessee than what we've seen before. But now the monkey's off the back of really kind of both these teams. Like, they're in the Final Four. Nobody expects, as much as Purdue is I think I saw 9.5 point is where it's kind of down to favorite. Everybody thinks UConn's going to run away with it. So it's just kind of like NC State and Purdue are playing to just, you know, we're here, like, play your game, leave it on the floor, see what happens. And so I think it's going to be really, really exciting. And it's going to be a high scoring, fun game that comes down to the last few possessions. So does anybody, Dylan, especially since you're, you know, just recently joining here and you've kind of pent up your aggression in the comments, did anybody have any last thoughts or kind of questions for the other side or anything? What do you got, Evan?
All right. So this is unrelated, completely unrelated to the actual game, but my older brother was deciding between NC State and Purdue back in the early 90s. And he took a visit to Purdue. You know, he was going to engineering school, whatever. And he came back and told me, he's like, they have the Naked Olympics. And I was like, no way. And it's like, yeah, they have a Naked Olympics. So is the Naked Olympics still a thing? Like, or was it, I think, history? Like, what's the deal with the Naked Olympics?
Yeah, Frank, what you got? You're the only Frank, one who actually went to Purdue.
So peek behind the curtain, Evan. Half of us didn't actually go to Purdue. We just have connections because family went to Purdue, or we just grew up going to Purdue games like constantly. So Frank's the only one of the three of us actually went to Purdue.
So I did a quick Google.
My brother Purdue. Went to Purdue. Dan in the comments, tell us if the
hey, what up, Dan, the more handsome brother.
So it was officially banned. It was a real thing. At Purdue, and actually this is so I'm learning about this just now for the first time. It was officially banned in 1986, but it continued for a while after that, kind of under the radar. But students would like wear masks on their face, apparently.
Oh, at least so they cover something up.
Yeah, so well, I mean, just so that they wouldn't get in trouble. Yeah, I'm learning about this for the first time. So I honestly didn't know about this.
Bring it back.
And so, yeah, we had another guest one time who informed us that Purdue won a national championship in ballroom dancing. And neither
I heard that. Yeah.
None of us were privy to that information as well. But it's actually on a Purdue.edu library. There are some articles about it in here as well.
I don't often go to the library, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. But I do want to say one thing about NC State. It's been an awesome postseason run, and I think that this really just kind of encapsulates and embodies what March is all about. I know there's been a lot of talk of like, do we get rid of automatic bids and whatnot? And I think this is the exact reason why you don't, right? Because you know it's very clear that NC State does belong. They've made it all the way to the Final Four, and you know without the automatic bid, they're not there. So that's just I don't know. Just it's been an awesome thing. I don't want to use the C words. I know it's been insulting, but it's just been really cool to see what they've been able to do. You know, in the postseason. So
We're Cinderella. Just give it to me. Like
I don't know. Yeah, a lot of
you can say it all you want. Yeah, no.
Yeah, a lot of we should not. I know Oakland is like we're not Cinderella, even though they only won one game and all that. No. And so, yeah. That's what I wanted to say. I bet Dylan does ballroom dancing on the weekends.
Oh, I do some dancing, but it ain't ballroom, baby.
He's still bring back the Naked Olympics when y'all win the natty.
Trust me, I'm going to get arrested for public indecency or whatever it is.
You thought we were trying Purdue fans after we got to the Final Four.
But then we'll sell my mugshot on a T-shirt, okay? And that's that's how we make bail. And, you know, it's a whole system. You know, I've already thought about this.
So here, I'll throw this out there. I don't think I've talked with Frank or Dylan about this, but I've put it on Twitter. So I just want to, since we talked about automatic bids, came up with an idea. So you guys let me know what you think about this. So I think the automatic bids was a bigger deal with some of the smaller conferences, the one bid conference, the bid stealing conferences. So I came up with this idea that if a team wins one of those one bid conferences, or it really could be any conference, but they win the conference tournament, but they were like the fifth seed, let's say, like they didn't win the regular season of that conference. There should be one prove it game between them and that who won the regular season. So basically it's almost like a double elimination for whoever won the conference. So there's some advantage. Cause like I can't imagine how those fan bases feel if a team dominates one of those conferences. Like, you know, Long Beach State, I'm not sure who won that conference, but like the team that won that conference looks at Long Beach State and goes, you're about to fire your coach, and they go to the NCAA tournament and we don't after we dominated all season. So like, I thought that'd be kind of a cool kind of aspect to say, hey, look, that way the tournament still matters. You still have to earn that chance to go to the NCAA tournament, but it doesn't kick these teams out that went 30-3 in these conferences and dominated, but they lose, they have one off night and they're out.
Yeah, but they need to balance it better, though. Like the Big 12, they're beating their drum all year long, and they got bounced early from this tournament, right? And it's because they yeah. they stacked, you know, Brad Brownell from Clemson called it out weeks ago, you know, when they were like on the bubble, like we're scheduling real teams. Big 12's, you know, inflating their, you know, their net ranking by playing the school for the blind and beating them by 50, right? And like they need to fix it. And you know, you look at the Mountain West, right? Everybody was talking about how great the Mountain West was, and like, where are they at? You know, those teams all lost early, you know. So I get your point, but at the same time, you know, it's not the metrics they're using right now are not the right metrics to make that call, because I think they're trying to include too many of the smaller programs that, you know, they might be okay, but I don't know. I don't think the metrics are right for where they're at the moment.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It would eliminate, like, there'd still only be one bid from that conference, but like instead of the whoever won the conference tournament automatically getting that bid, they'd have to prove it against who dominated all season. And then whoever wins that gets the one automatic bid instead of having.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen them talk about more play-in type games like that. I mean, that's I can understand that.
Yeah,
they just need to get the metrics right from the jump. I think there's too many people trying to game the rankings.
Yeah, I mean, you could even put UConn in that category too. To be honest with you, I think their non-conference schedule was ranked 283rd in KenPom. So
yeah, like, I mean, what's
the Big East is weak too.
Yeah, don't get me
started. UConn hasn't won a ranked game away from stores in like, I don't know, 5 years or something weird like that. It was some stat. I mean, it's hard to win basketball games, but you know, I'll take a team from the Big East rather than another Mountain West team or, you know, a bottom barrel a Big 12 team.
Agreed. Yeah. Completely. Yeah, agree.
And I don't get me started on their conference or their championship run last year, where they were like the first team in NCAA history to not be a top three seed and only play one top three seed and no one or two seeds and win the NCAA tournament.
Right.
Like they had, yes, they dominated, not taken away from that. They dominated, but like, let's not act like the toughest game was Gonzaga and Timmy was in foul trouble the whole game, right? You know? So, but yeah. So anybody got anything else? And we've been at, what, we're an hour and 8 minutes now. So appreciate you jumping in here last second, Evan, and really, really last second, Dylan.
Hey, I showed up. All right, better late than never. Okay.
Make sure too, I forgot to mention at the beginning, make sure you like and subscribe, not just Boiler Express, but go check out Red and White Podcast as well. And stay tuned for some big things coming up. Check out Martin Vintage, CBB Analytics, and Cincy Blitzboards. And we'll see y'all, I guess, after Saturday night's game. We'll do a little post game. Maybe we'll get Evan in here too if we aren't at each other's throats after what went down.
God help us.
I might be crying, but whatever.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank y'all for tuning in. Appreciate y'all. Have a good night, and boiler up.